Thank you for tuning in to the Let Me Say This podcast. If you clicked on the wrong podcast, I'm sorry, but this one might be a good one, so I would stick around and listen to it. Heavy discussion for this one, very polarizing topics, some things that in our culture are very much talked about. Some people choose to refrain from it, but I hope that if you listen to the whole thing, that you can get something out of it. Maybe you can form more opinions, maybe you double down on some of the ones that you have, maybe you learn something, maybe you don't. But I hope you enjoy it, and yeah, tune in. When I first heard the news surrounding Lil Nas X, the response to it, with the video, the music video that he put out, I said, yep, got it. I knew right then and there, you know, what my response was going to be. I understood the public outcry in the beginning, and I knew that it would be something that just fizzled out. You know, it was very visceral, very reactionary. But before I get into what exactly I'm going to get into, I need to preface it by saying this. If you are someone who believes that there is not a God with absolute certainty, you are wrong. If you are somebody who believes that there is a God with absolute certainty, you are also wrong. It's okay to live an existence without knowing how your existence came to be. Really, it's fine. We don't need to have an answer or to have every answer or know the fundamental purpose of why we're here, if there even is one to be had, right? Followers of Christ have used the name of God to carry out things like genocide, exploiting human life, and this has happened over centuries of time. Acts of violence have been explained, rationalized, through the idea of God, through this idea of a divine calling. The word of God coming to them through a prayer, or seen through subliminal messaging, or opportunities that arise in real life that relate to these prayers that they have committed to, or have done. If the interactions between the individual and God are intimately private and are incapable of being questioned by someone like me, by an outsider to this relationship between you and this God, right? How are we to challenge their motives? Meaning, let's say you told me last night that you prayed over your mother's health. How do I have the power or the knowledge to tell you that how you prayed was wrong, or that you aren't able to communicate with God in a way that is effective? And these are all rhetorical questions, right? Because the first point holds true. I can't deny or confirm your faith in a way that proves or disproves your commitment to God. But if a person simply needs to participate in the rituals of a given religion, right, to escape any kind of, I don't know, condemnation or something like that, right, then we're left with two realities here. Number one, no sin carries the seriousness that certain followers or certain conduits of this religion made them out to be. And number two, if this commitment to God relieves a person of this internal damnation, I think that's the term that they use, right? Then the outcome of your actions do not matter as much as some would like to believe. Those are kind of the same point, just with a focus on two different things. Because if all can be forgiven, then forgiveness itself doesn't really hold much value. If forgiveness is universal and limitless, then where does that leave heaven and hell? If the worst of us can be saved, and the saving is simply, it simply requires a commitment to God, whatever that means, I have an idea what it means, but I don't know all that it entails. But if your saving simply requires a quote-unquote commitment to God, and I can't deny you of your commitment with absolute certainty or consistency, then there isn't really a solid criteria for good and bad. Who is to say that the actions of individuals we call bad, quote-unquote, are not the product of worship or the result from a prayer towards God? How do we define good and bad across time without then altering the criteria for God's version of good and bad? Humans' role in determining acceptable behavior changes. And as a result, the word of God is going to change. Sermons refer to the teaching of the Bible. Interpretation leads this teaching of the Bible. Right, when a pastor gives this, when they refer to the Bible, they use different quotes, different passages, right? They're telling you the story. But the interpretation of what's presented in the Bible is what leads the teaching. The message can be lost, altered, or maybe even misinterpreted. Things like lying, believing in Satan, preferring to have sex with someone else who has the same genital setup as you, only get looked at as bad because a civilization once upon a time came up with these arbitrary rules that humans should live by. Kind of like these rules of life or morality and ethics and things like that. Religion just being one of many forms to enforce these kind of beliefs. And these things, like many others, were either given the title of bad and good based on what the community felt as acceptable and unacceptable behavior. This civilization played the game of colonizer just a little bit better than the others did. And so they got to implement their belief system over the surrounding ones or over the other ones around them. This dynamic of certain civilizations imposing their beliefs on a mass population happened countless of times in different areas across the world. This fusing and mixed matching is why we have similarities in morals, but still some differences in what they are or how to apply them. And if you're smart, you're probably thinking, oh, okay, so murder is only wrong because someone decided to call it bad, right? Or, oh, so we should just do whatever we want since good and bad are just made up things anyway. And my stance on that is this. So there are things that humans before you and I were around agreed upon that would better humanity and the continuation of it. Whether they were right or wrong isn't necessarily the point I'm making here. And I'm sure if you dig a context deep enough, you can make an excuse for why murder is justified. You're just not going to find that here. Like, I'm not going to entertain that. Right, so I'm sure that you could probably come up with reasons as to why that logic is a little bit flawed, but the point still stands. How do I decide for someone else that their actions are worth this eternal damnation? How do I, as a human, say, you know what, your actions are against the word of God, and so that you are, I don't know. What did they make Lil Nas X to be out of? Like, they called him a devil worshiper, right? They said that he was a Satanist. Lil Nas X isn't any different than your local pastor preaching the word of God, right? It's a performance done with the intent to share something worth hearing. Excuses have been made for pastors engaging in sexual misconduct with young children. They don't even get fired usually. They typically get relocated. They go to confession and maybe work out a private settlement if it's necessary. But we see this excuse made for the inner circles of certain religions. And in some cases, we don't. So this picking and choosing is where organized religion, has its faults. Lil Nas X isn't doing anything different than what heavy metal rock groups do, or Marilyn Manson, or anyone who's challenged conventional forms of expression. And this isn't to attack those who do, like, it's not to attack rock groups or whoever, but it's just to remind people that this picking and choosing with religion is the biggest reason why it gets the slack that it does. He just got caught up in a position where he pissed off the people who guard this idea of God with their life. The ones who claim his love, God's love, is his forgiveness and his love is unconditional. Unless you perform a laundry list of activities that were called sins for whatever reason. Things, and you can widen this whole list. I mean, some of the obvious ones are adultery, right? Same sex partners. But you can even extend it out if you were to go through some of the commandments and interpret what they mean. Things like depression are a sin. Mental laziness, physical laziness. Divorce can be a sin. Anxiety is a sin. Getting a tattoo is a sin. You know, marking your body with a foreign object. Let me end on that for a second. Let me backtrack for a second. What I wanted to do, I just removed myself from the story-like depiction and the anthropomorphic view of religion. This humanizing of what it means to have a God. This sort of basic concept of heaven and hell. For something that seems so complex, there's certainly a lot of people who make it seem such an easy thing to understand. Like, it's very simple. You just do this and this and you're good. Like, okay, you know? I'm not here to shit on religion necessarily, or God, really. I understand its role that it plays in a society. I understand the structure that it can provide. It can give people a sense of grounding. We're desperate creatures. We're looking for reassurance, right? Like, we need something to be like, what does this all mean? What is the purpose? Why are we even here? What is the point of us doing what we're doing if there isn't something to look forward to when we're gone, right? Prayer is the bridge for many people who are lost and are looking to find reason in this life. I'm not anti-God, more so than I am anti-structured religion. I don't care for what Christianity has done for Black people. I don't care for what it's done over centuries, placing people within this structure where they don't feel like they can be themselves, that they're penalized for trying to figure out what this life can mean for them by limiting the parameters in which you can explore, by creating things like self-doubt, anxiousness, self-deprecating thoughts, you know, about what it means for them to be acting in a certain way. I hold a vague and quite unclear view of God. But I think that's more accurate than any detailed version of what you can find elsewhere. I don't have the audacity to give you the details about what it means to have a God. I can't sit here and tell you that, oh, there is this place, and those are the two options. I don't, man. There could be an entity beyond our ability to understand it that had or still has an influence on the workings of human life and what we come to perceive in daily interactions. That could be the case. There could be something beyond our understanding, beyond our ability to sense it and perceive it in a tangible reality, right? We may not be able to look out into nature and go, okay, there's God, or there's a sign of God. We may not be able to do that. We may not have the tools within this blob of a human body to know if there is one, and if there is, can we see it? So, you know, the reason why Lil Nas X had to deal with that for about a week or so, he's going to deal with something similar to that just as he goes on. Excuse me, but, you know, the reason why it got such a quick uproar is because religion, heaven, hell, God, the devil, these things are still a touchy subject. We're not that far removed from having countries having a national religion. Some countries still do. It's very much infused in the way cultures are formed, the way decisions are made, the reason why wars start, some wars start. I think, we're desperate creatures. We're looking for reassurance. We want to believe that what we believe is true, and that it can save us, and that it can guide us in times where we don't understand why bad things happen. It gives us a sense of security when everything around us is crumbling. It's hard to look out into the world and see what's going on and say to yourself, shit is just happening. It's hard for some people to go and see genocide, see destruction, see war, see disease, plague human life, and say, man, there has to be something better. It's hard for people to do that. And I get it. I understand what it does for people. I understand the power that it can bring out of them. But I also know the power is taken away from people. I've seen it be used as a form of torture. I've seen it be used as a form of war against the mind, against other people. You know, it's a big influencer. God, religion, is a big influencer on many people's lives. Lil Nas X is everything religion does not, conventional, historically, religion does not want to see. Religion has been waged against black people. It has been made as something that if you are gay, then you are not a part of God's creation. And if you are outspoken against things that are a part of conventional religion, then you are also conflicting with the word and the image of God. And so he embodies all those things. And so when you have politicians, average folks looking at what he's doing and go, this is outrageous, you know, what he's doing is promoting Satanism and all these different things, when who are you to decide that what this person's actions are one, worth your criticism, as you are also a human being who sins, right? I'm referring to, if we're going to use this umbrella of God, right? You're a person who sins too. And so no matter what the actions of this individual are, isn't it up to God to forgive? And doesn't he forgive all? And number two, he is made in God's creation. At least that is what, you know, that at least that's what Christianity says. So he is everything and anything God is. So we're full circle with this whole Derek Chauvin case. But we haven't even begun reimagining what this country could be if it just made the easy choices with this whole racism thing. George Floyd was murdered in May of 2020. Derek Chauvin was sentenced 11 months after the fact. Chauvin's performance last year created a safe space for businesses and companies to pretend like they give a shit about anything other than making sure that their bottom line is a net positive for the quarter, right? Making sure that their earnings are in check. His performance last year inspired people employed by the state police department to make their existence into a slogan that takes away their humanity and assigns them as a quote-unquote blue life. His performance strengthened that fraternity. His performance raised no eyebrows to black people. And I can't even imagine the lives of the supporting characters in all this. The young woman who managed to stay under control and capture this injustice and the people around her staying witness to it when it wasn't their responsibility to be the ones who would later hold Chauvin accountable for his actions. If there's no recording, there's no trial. If there wasn't such an obvious footage of misconduct, this does not even go to court. Obvious footage does not equal conviction. We saw that with Ronnie King. It's rare that police officers are told they're guilty when they're acting under their line of work, when the premise of their actions fall under employment hours, when they're on the job, right? When they're doing what they are told to do. I'm skeptical about him, quote unquote, getting what's coming to him in prison. I don't believe that he will be subjected to the same type of treatment that other prisoners are. Circumstances could make that possible where he does. I just see it as unlikely. I believe that Derek Chauvin will leave the public memory given enough weeks and months. I'm not implying that people will forget about him or forget what happened. I'm saying that this will be thrown into the pile of other situations similar to this. And this isn't the marking of something new, but another example of what has been going on. It will become another piece to what people see as the big picture. He will just be another story, although a pretty big one, but he will just be another story that we talk about. And Derek Chauvin, he will be a part of what we know in this culture. But the feelings, the attention, the uproar, everything that we have seen last summer, and then now again in recent news with his sentencing, will fizzle, will become out of the forefront in people's minds. For George Floyd, he is not symbolic. He is not sacrificial. He is not an example. He is not an exception. He is the product of what's been left unturned and left unsolved in American policing. And it comes down, and it comes, it comes down to the confusion surrounding what we need to do when it comes to these black folks. The confusion about what systems need to stay, which need to be improved, and which need to be removed. We haven't gotten on the same page for that. And that's where a lot of this discourse starts. We don't even know how to get on the same page, let alone stick to the same page. America's one talent is that it knows how to tell a story. For those who love to be tucked in at night, sleep soundly. You can pick your favorite American tale and hold on to it for life. All that noise going on outside can be avoided if you have the means to shut the noise off. What do I mean by that? Privilege. This is where privilege comes in. Privilege has levels. White people have access to most of them, if not all levels of privilege in this country. But privilege is not just a white person thing. Privilege can come in many forms. I myself have privilege. I have a financial privilege that allows me to not have to deal with certain things that other people with less fortune than I do have to deal with. Right? Money for me, a means of survival, has been not even a thought for me. I never had to worry about if the lights were going to stay on. I never had to worry about if I was going to get food. I never had to worry about, you know, making sure that my family was okay. You know, those things were just, they weren't even thoughts. It was like, yeah, we're good, you know? Like, we're okay. You know, privilege add a considerable amount of wealth to their name and history. This is for white people. Add a considerable amount of wealth to their name and history has proven that they're damn near untouchable. If you are a white person, you already have a sense of this privilege. If you are now a wealthy white person, and I'm not even including male, I'm not even including straight. If you are a white wealthy person, you are almost untouchable. We know how this story goes. The ones who need to be woken up out of their sleep will not be. You can continue on with whatever story you want to live. White people get that luxury. You can choose where this ending goes. You can choose the characters. You can choose the plot. You don't have to worry about being imposed against. You are the creator of your own story. The ones who are outside, seeing and hearing all this chaos, go on, will be reminded that their chaos is going on. No one learns, nothing is shifted. The people in the house are comfy and cozy. The ones outside are scared and nervous, not knowing what's going to happen. I was going to end it there, and then I got a call today. Right before I was going to post this, I had a conversation with a close friend, and they shared their feelings around these social issues. Police, racism, their roles, how they connect, how they don't. And I was on par with the gist of what was said, the general points that this person made. And it got me thinking about, you know, what's really happening here? Number one, there are no such thing as good cops. Number two, there are no such thing as bad cops. Here's the correct breakdown, and it applies across the board, not just with police. Number one, well, first of all, wait. There's four situations that we need to understand. Number one, there are good people, depending on who you ask. These good people are said to have good qualities, good characteristics, good ethics, good judgment in their personal life. Right? So, as human beings, there will be a considerable amount of people who say, you know what, that is a good person. And then when they enter their job, their profession, they bring these so-called good qualities with them. They transfer over this good character, this good judgment. Okay, that's number one. Number two, people who are seen as good, depending on who you ask, with good judgment, good character, all that stuff in their personal life, when they enter their job, they do not transfer over these good qualities. When they're on the job, they're the opposite of what they present themselves to be in their public image and in their personal life. Okay? Number three is the opposite of both these things. Similar, but opposite. You have what are to be known as bad people in their personal life. And they have bad judgment, bad character. They don't make the right decisions. They're assholes, whatever you want to say, you know, depending on who you ask. And then when they enter their job, they transfer over this bad judgment, this bad character. You know, they are seen on their job as being exactly who they are in their personal life. And the number four is interesting. You have people who are seen as bad people in their personal life. But when they enter their job, they actually do the things that they're supposed to do. They are not who they are in their personal life. You know, they may be assholes with their friends, family, strangers, whoever, right? When they're outside of the job. They may be terrible people, but when they enter their job, they do what they're supposed to do. They're the opposite of what they show in their personal life. They have good ethics, good morals, all that stuff. And that's just one half of the coin. So you have those four situations that you have, right? That's just one half of it. The other half is about the history of how the police force came to be. This random assortment of individuals looking to protect local communities, local municipalities, local businesses, to watch over their neighborhoods for suspicious behavior. Suspicious behavior being seen as stragglers in the street with no job, no housing, no ownership, no income, right? And at the time, at the time of these initial assortments coming together, if you want to call them militias, I guess you can, right? The people who fit that straggler mold were black folks. White folks could have had that too, and I'm certain that certain actions led white folks to be targeted, right? But the easy and most susceptible target were runaway slaves, or after 1865, anyone who was freed but did not have ownership of property or income or any of that, you know what I mean? Which was usually black people. The majority of that was going to be black people, right? You were just released from state-approved slavery, right? And you still have to deal with the consequences of racist thinking. You're not going to have employment. Like, you're just not going to have that. So you have all these black people in the street not doing anything. You're going to have these militias come, if you want to call them that, come around and you know, lock these people up. Hey, what are you doing? Why are you not at work? Why, you know, what are you doing out here, right? The police force wasn't always a centralized, state-approved commission, I guess. I don't know. Initially, it was community members taking power into their own hands. Eventually, an adopted police task force was developed, and then other states followed. But the people who became police officers brought this level of racist thinking. They learned what it meant to be a police officer, but with that, they also brought their culture and a way of life into the mold. Refinement took place. A sense of professionalism was adopted. The laws that were in place were neatly established. The criteria for breaking the law was established. And it continues to be refined, just like any other profession, but, you know, this refinement didn't happen overnight, and it's not perfect either, right? So through this growth process, you still have these people who adapt this racist thinking, still apply these cultural practices, these societal norms within their work. To refer back to the initial point I made about how you have these four characteristics of humans and their behavior, and then the history of the police, it starts to make sense why we see what we see and why there are moments that aren't so black and white, literally. When you marry each single point about human behavior with the culture of the police, you'll understand why some tendencies have stuck, why there's debate on quote-unquote good and bad apples in the police, and why the police have a branding problem that will not be fixed unless a new and restructured organization is put in place. Think of the identity of the police as, stick with me on this, think of the identity of the police as a sex offender. It doesn't really matter how much change you've made. It doesn't matter how many meetings you went to. It doesn't matter how long it's been since you were registered. People will continue to view you in a way that is skeptical, apprehensive, because of what we've heard and seen you do in the past. You can't escape what your image has been. You can try your hardest to change it, and when I say that, it depends on the severity of what you were, what you became to be known as. If you've done something that is as profoundly disturbing as a, let's say, a child sex offender, right? Then that's going to stick with you. People don't just forget that, right? Yeah, you may be doing better now. Maybe you learned your lesson, if there is such a thing to be had. But people don't forget what you did, and that sticks with you. Whether you're trying to escape that or not, whether you're trying to reinvent that or not, people are going to continue to be skeptical. That's the problem that the police has. They're trying to fight a battle that I don't see them ever winning. I don't see the police ever getting a complete public approval. I don't see that happening. And I don't really blame people for not wanting to. Black people in particular, right? For holding onto this fear and this skepticism. Because it's warranted. It's not like this came out of thin air. Whew, man. America needs to figure out what it needs to improve, remove, adapt. It needs to figure out what it needs to keep and what it needs to leave, get rid of. That's its biggest issue. Another issue it has is that it needs to make the people who don't have to give a shit, give a shit. It does nothing for me. America doesn't benefit because a black person knows that black people get treated poorly. That's not how this gets fixed. America gets fixed when the people who never have to concern themselves, and let's say people live 80 years. If you can go 80 years without having to even think of what it means for people to deal with racism, to deal with wealth inequality, to have to worry about survival, if you don't have to even think about those things, you don't care. Things can go as they go, and it doesn't really matter. The moment that you get those people to start giving a shit, that's when you have something real. That's when you have something tangible to fix. That's when you have long-term progress, long-term effective change. This Chauvin case is going to be something that is imprinted in memory, but it will slip. It will not be on the forefront of people's minds. It will be something that we remember, but I don't know if we're going to have enough time to sit with the weight of what this situation meant before we have to now try to analyze something else that comes along. And I think when you get this overturn, this, you know, you get new problems every day, every week. It's hard to know where to start. It's hard to know how to fix this when you have these new laundry list of things that you got to now look at, identify, and try to solve. We're in a strange place right now. Not that this is any different than what we've experienced before, but I mean, we're getting exposed to new situations every day. We're getting exposed to new forms of hate, of discrimination, of of uncertainty, not knowing what the right thing to do or say is. And I don't know if we're going to have enough time to get the things from the past corrected before we have new problems ahead. But I think, you know, especially for these podcasts, I mean, I talk about some heavy stuff, but, and we went through a wide array of, I mean, talked about God and then talked about police and racism, and, you know, all these fun things. And, but, you know, I'm still hopeful though. I like to end the podcast with something hopeful, something to look forward to, you know. I get to speak about this when there was a point in time on this land, on this part of the world, where if I were to walk out into public, somebody would have ran me down, put me to the ground, and sent me back into essentially a caged existence. That's not to take away from what's going on today, but it's just to say that, you know what? Even with everything that we still need to figure out, you know, there's something here to be consider. And people who were better men and women before me did their role, did their job, did what they were supposed to do. And because of them, I'm here today, healthy, alive at 22 years old, trying to make a difference some way, somehow. And, you know, I think there's something to be said about that. Have a good day.